Okay, so there's a lot of ground to cover in a very short period of time, and we're just trying to do this to foster discussion for at a later point. So in the Mid-Atlantic region, which is a pretty wide geographical area, and I include six states in that region, but even in that region, Appalachia, such as West Virginia and parts of Virginia, are very distinct microclimates, certainly from New Jersey and the Eastern Shore. So when I speak about what's going on here, it's sort of a general overview to a large extent. But as I said, it's been 10 years since we looked at high tunnels in the United States. The colloquia was published in the 09 Hort Technology. You know, this presentations won't be published. Obviously, they're recorded. But it's nice to get, you know, these snapshots at intervals of time to see just exactly how we're progressing with this type of technology. So how many high tunnels do we have in production in the Mid-Atlantic? A big question mark, even in my own state. Our state agronomist for the NRCS, who I work with fairly closely, quoted as many as 1,200 in West Virginia alone, which would mean we would have 20 to 30 per county, which I don't think that's quite what we have. I'd estimated about 800, but Pennsylvania has at least 800, probably a multiple of that, of three or four, and couldn't get firm figures from the other four states. But I think as an extension person, it's not as important to know the absolute number of tunnels, but more important to know where they're located in your state, you know, because then you're going to be able to direct programming to those different regions or those different counties. You know, but if you just want an absolute number, you know, where you have 1,000 high tunnels in your state, and then what I do is I multiply that by 2.5, because we figure we get 2.5 acres of equivalent food production for a high tunnel. And so it actually turns out to be a pretty impressive acreage figure for an administrator. So you have thousands of acres of specialty crop production if you have, you know, 500 or 600 high tunnels in production. So we have a fairly close relationship with the NRCS, as Carol had mentioned, in the Northwest as well. Many of my colleagues in the Mid-Atlantic have also a relationship with this agency. We have a cooperative agreement where we train their frontline people on high tunnel production, and also their clients are our clients. So we actually train the same people. So we consider them to be a valuable partner for a lot of the extension programming that we do. So they are not a research agency. So they need extension. They need the experiment station in order to do what they have to do. So I think it's a great partnership. And you can actually use the NRCS folks as educators for your program. So if you need educators for high tunnel training, some of these district conservationists are actually fairly good educators. So we're going to try to, you know, answer some questions related to high tunnel production in each region, and questions like what are the dominant crops and how to grow or select these crops. And the way that I've been trying to answer that question has been doing a series of surveys across our state. These have been surveys that have been done in waves as we've done workshops, as we've done conferences, field days, twilight meetings. Sometimes we approach the growers, you know, face-to-face and do these surveys. But I think it's important for you as horticulture extension people to get a handle on what's being grown, how it's being marketed, and what are some of the production and marketing issues that these growers face. So this was just a survey that I took out of the pile, and I thought it was interesting. We got fairly good feedback from this particular grower, but I thought it was important to know, you know, what was being grown and what are the production and marketing problems that this grower is having. But you can see with the arrow there, too much of the same thing. You know, too many growers growing the same thing. That's a common theme among these growers, because there has just been, you know, mass construction of high tunnels and very little planning for the crops. So a lot of people are growing all the same thing at the same time, and there's a glut or a surplus on the market, so that is hurting the grower. So we need to work on that as well. So on the crop choices, you know, we have warm season cropping cycle, and we have the cool season cropping cycle in the Mid-Atlantic, and it's almost 6 months for each cycle. There's tremendous overlap with cool season crops into the warm season cropping cycle, which goes from March 1st to October 1st. But there's really nothing new under the sun here for crops that are dominant in the warm season in these high tunnels. It's tomatoes, cucumbers, peppers. These are high value, high yielding, you know, high demand crops that the growers have selected. The challenge is to get these growers to rotate these crops, not to be in a monoculture system. And even within each product category, there's room for diversification. You know, there's different types of specialty peppers that can be grown, different types of tomatoes that can be grown. So there's room for diversification even within these three types of crops. And, you know, the work that's being done with grafting, biofumigation, all that has made it easier to grow these crops in the tight rotation that you might have within a high tunnel. Okay, so in the cool season, which we would say runs from October to March, the main thing here is that tunnels in the mid-Atlantic region are not being utilized efficiently during the winter months. In fact, the majority of them sit fallow during the winter. So we need to work on getting growers to do winter cropping systems and helping to identify some markets. But the cash crops that they do grow are, you know, the leafy greens, the lettuce, and the root crops. Those are dominant. And then on the berry crops, in West Virginia, strawberries are the number one fruit crop grown in high tunnel, but in the mid-Atlantic region, it's raspberries, okay? And the only reason our growers grow strawberries rather than raspberries is that they prefer an annual crop. They don't want to do the perennials. So, but anyway, that's the choice on the berries. Other crops that are emerging that we have are flowers, ornamentals, herbs. We're doing ginger work this year, different types of production systems for ginger. And we have a couple growers in our state that are growing fruit trees as well. So the other crops that also we're seeing, and this is one of our projects, are the ethnic crops or the niche crops. And these are heritage beans that we're growing in West Virginia because there's a tremendous market for heritage beans in Appalachia. These beans are connected to history of the state. And so if you could connect history with food, you actually have a good marketing combination. So tunnels are an excellent place to grow indeterminate beans because you can get high yield per square foot, and you can't match that with open field production. So crops that, you know, snap beans, for example, would not normally be considered a top cash crop for high tunnels. In certain areas, it could be. You know, so there's a scenario where that actually works. So we can maybe talk about this in the discussion time, but we're working with growers on no-till systems in high tunnels. Growers are over-tilling their soil. They're over-fertilizing their soil. So they need to get into sort of integrating cover crops into the product mix or the crop mix. So how do growers make decisions on crop choices for high tunnels? Primarily earliness. You know, that's the main deciding factor. So the growers need to be using these tunnels year-round for full maximum productivity. So other production issues which may be limiting the efficiency of high tunnels in the mid-Atlantic region, I really grouped into a couple categories, broad categories. One is temperature management. And that is not only ambient temperature, but also soil temperature. So growers need to be aware of both of air and soil temperature. And it's often as much of a challenge to keep the tunnel cool as it is to keep it warm. So we need to spend a lot more time working with growers on temperature management in these tunnels. I would like to have a discussion today on row cover management within high tunnels. I have theories on using row covers, when to use them in tunnels, when not to use them. So we can talk about that. We're seeing elevated levels of soluble salts, potassium, magnesium, calcium. We're seeing elevated nitrate levels, high phosphorus, and high organic matter. You know, growers are over-fertilizing crops and under-watering crops. Okay, that's sort of the generalities that we have here. So it's not a good combination. So we need work on irrigation management, frequency, duration. We need to have evaluation of irrigation sensors versus just manual irrigation, which is what most growers do. So there needs to be some better technique for irrigation. We can talk about that in greater depth too. We have crop schedules for my state. So we publish these crop schedules for the growers. So the first thing they get when they get their high tunnel contract from the NRCS is they get a crop schedule because they don't know what to grow, when to start planting it, and when to stop planting it. And I will tell you that the crop schedules should be done regional. I am not going to use a crop schedule from the upper Midwest or the New England, and we shouldn't. You know, crop schedules are regional specific. So we can be general with them, but growers need to know the planting window and the harvest window for each of these crops. And then variety and genotype selection is important too. Other issues, labor. There's a lot of labor involved in site preparation and construction, which the growers are concerned about. And then also in rural areas, access to institutional markets such as hospitals and schools, which is a good regional wholesale market too. So successful outreach models that I would share with you for reaching these new high tunnel growers, okay? Some of these things I do, some of them my colleagues do in the Mid-Atlantic. So we have an in-state listserv, and you know growers are more receptive to information and advice from other growers, right? They're tired of hearing me and you. They like to have feedback from hopefully more experienced growers. And so this in-state listserv is specific to our state. There's a nationwide listserv, which is great too, but it's sometimes too general. And but anyway, that's one idea. I don't do a lot of videos, but videos are an option. We have a high tunnel certification program where we're training growers over a 14-week period to be high tunnel growers. So it's sort of like a master gardener program, so you can duplicate that. Twilight meetings at experienced growers' farms. Again, same theory, getting information from other experienced growers, and then training extension and NRCS personnel. So these are all categories that we have information gaps. We can talk about that later and what progress we're making on these particular areas. And I saw in Carroll's a mix of Quonset and Gothic style. Almost all the tunnels in Mid-Atlantic are Gothic style, double poly high tunnels. So that's mainly for snow load, wind resistance. We're seeing growers adopt roof ventilation systems, ridge vents. That's becoming common. And then also I'm seeing a trend towards larger high tunnels, longer high tunnels, so more air volume. So I'm almost out of time. So we need to tighten up the recommendations on fertilization. Stop extrapolating open field fertilization recommendations to high tunnel crops, okay? And that's a lengthy discussion that we need to have later as well. And I think that is about where I'm at. And the final thing is I'm going to be passing out this survey that you can complete over the course of this workshop. And it's just two questions, and you don't have to put your name. You can just put your state, and that would provide us good feedback for any future programming that we may want to do. Bill, you want to pass on this side, and I'll get the other side. Am I out of time? Completely out of time.
We have a minute or two for questions, and my presentation, which is the next one, is short. So raise your hand and ask those questions.
It's a lot of technology under one system here. Yeah,
Becky. You mentioned that you estimate 2.5 acres of equivalent food production per tunnel, per acre.
Yes.
Tunnel?
Per tunnel. Okay. I mean,
if you can figure
full year use of a commercial sized tunnel, and then what I call a commercial sized tunnel 3,000 square feet. I mean, you already have higher yields per plant. And then you have a longer production cycle. You have less wastage, so you have higher percent marketable. If you actually do the calculations on your field production versus the same crop, maybe the same variety in the high tunnel, it will be equal to 2, maybe 2.5 times the yield. So, you know, that tunnel, that's 1/20th of an acre versus 2 acres. I think the conversion is pretty rational. Do you guys feel that's sort of stretching the imagination here a little bit? Yeah, time is completely up here. But I'll do the same for you, Bill. I'll get up and dance or something. I don't know. But anyway, so I mean, we're not in hyperbole here. We don't do that kind of stuff. I mean, we are extension people, but we speak the truth. And, you know, the main thing that I say that's important is there's no better time to have extension than for a program like this, because we're the only entity that's going to provide research-based, unbiased information to these growers. I mean, the greenhouse companies are great, the seed companies, the fertilizer companies, they're excellent people, but they don't give, you know, unbiased truth to these growers. So that's where we come in. That's where Extension comes in, and that's why Extension is still viable in every state of the nation, because we're the only agency that's able to do something like that. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the case for food production can be made with these high tunnels, that they are contributing a significant amount to local food production. That's almost equivalent to that kind of conversion factor for open fields. But the main thing is we just need to do a better job getting these growers to use these tunnels year-round, not just the shoulders of the growing season, but, I mean, and I know everybody needs a rest, right? I mean, I need a rest, but I mean, you know, they're really for maximum profitability, these things need to be used to their full economic capacity. So we can talk about that later, and I will yield to Bill.